This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Friday, October 18th edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Jennifer Kuiper, and now we get the Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. On today's Noon Business Hour, we have a lot cooking, so we'll talk about U.S. leading economic indicators falling for a second straight month, China's economy growing at the slowest pace in 26 years, and how that plays into the U.S.-China trade war. And on Entrepreneur Friday, sprouted buckwheat grows into a business for a Chicago woman. Now, reports on the Chinese and American economies are out today. We'll break down the numbers in our next segment. But right now, bull markets and building booms have historically gone hand in hand. Let's talk about the so-called skyscraper effect with Jack Ablin. He is Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital in Chicago. And Jack, what is that, the skyscraper effect?
Yeah, you know, it's, if you look back over the investment horizon in history and look at when the tallest buildings have been built, they tend to be represent peaks. The Empire State Building right before, and I think it was 1929, Sears Tower in the early 70s. It's an interesting phenomenon, and it makes a lot of sense from a financial point of view, because generally peaks are coordinated with a heightened risk level and very easy credit terms. And so you put those two together, and it's probably not a surprise that the tallest building in the world will be built.
Where are we seeing a lot of this building going on in the U.S.? How does Chicago? What is Chicago's role in all of this?
Chicago is certainly there's building going on, no doubt about it. We're seeing certainly some office towers going up. Wolf Point, I think, is particularly pretty active right now. There's a rental apartment building, soon to be a Salesforce Tower, going up. But New York, I think, in particular, with Hudson Yards, a $25 billion project, looks like to be a record-breaking development.
Are we seeing any effects of less investment in the U.S. building by Chinese investors?
No, I haven't seen much in the way of any pullback in liquidity. I will say probably Chinese have not been as aggressive in investing in these deals as they have in the past, but other investors have kind of filled in those gaps, and liquidity still seems pretty high, interest rates low, and so you know, the urge to build buildings is still pretty powerful right now.
Jack, tell us about copper. What's going on with copper and why the fall?
Sure. So copper is one of those great indicators that can give us a real-time gauge as to what's going on, particularly in the manufacturing production side of the global economy. And given that copper has been falling, probably not a surprise, given the weakness that we're seeing in manufacturing and production, I find more useful, quite frankly, Jennifer, the relationship between copper and gold. Here's copper as a, you know, perfectly utilitarian commodity used in a wide variety of industries, and yet, you know, and gold on the other side is really more of a store of value, precious metal, doesn't have much industrial use, and it's tends to be a flight to quality. And so when gold outperforms copper, that does suggest a pretty dramatic downturn. When copper outperforms gold, that says, you know, we've got some growth and risk-taking ahead. Right now, even though copper is falling, gold is even falling faster. And so we are seeing copper outperform gold, suggesting that interest rates are probably, even now, are probably still a little bit too low and should tick higher.
Jack Ablin, Chief Investment Officer, Crescent Capital in Chicago, thanks for joining us. Reports on the American and Chinese economies are reflecting a slowdown. Let's discuss the latest with Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and political economist at andrewbush.com in Chicago. Andy, you know, China's GDP has fallen sharply since the first quarter of 2018, when it gained almost 7%. But is what we're seeing now, is this a result of the trade dispute with the U.S. that's rearing its head?
Yeah, part of that is it. But we've also seen, for instance, motor vehicle sales in China fall 15% from their peak in early 2018. So there's more than just the trade component to their economy going down. And I think overall, they're just struggling as the Chinese economy is slowing, as really global growth has been slowing as well beyond the trade wars. The trade wars just kind of accelerated and it maybe amplified it a little bit, but China was slowing either way. They've just been getting less and less bang for their buck as they've increased debt in that country. They just don't get as much GDP out of it. So they're definitely slowing, and it adds to the mystery and intrigue about whether or not we're going to get a trade deal between the U.S. and China, if there's more pressure there or not. So it's fascinating to watch. But the numbers last night were 6%, a little bit lower than what was expected. Again, big grain of salt, everybody. 6% on GDP on China. We're really just not sure that's an accurate number. They don't give us the numbers underneath that. So to some extent, it seems kind of mythical.
So slowing in China, but is this just the beginning? Could we see even further slowing?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely. If we don't have a trade agreement between the United States and China, for sure we're going to continue to see slower not only Chinese growth, but also global growth. And I would say the outlook for that has improved, but we're still a long ways away from it. We'll see if Treasury Secretary Mnuchin travels over there in the next 2 weeks. That would lead people to believe that, you know, something's happening, meaning it's moving forward. The president had said that China would buy $50 billion worth of U.S. agricultural products. Just to put that in context, the U.S. exports $150 billion a year, so that would be a third of all of our exports would go to China. That would be a big surprise. So I'm not sure we're going to reach that level of what the president has said.
And then looking at the U.S., U.S. leading economic index falls just under, well, a little less than 0.1% in September. What's this the result of?
Yeah, I mean, it's declining manufacturing. We know that the manufacturing sector, because of the trade wars, is really in a recession from that standpoint. Global PMIs are very, very weak, purchasing manager indexes. They've really gone into negative territory, showing that sector of the economy is regressing. It's coming under the gun from the trade wars. But as far as the United States goes, you know, we're still kicking off quite a few jobs. The economy from the service sector has softened a little bit. That's what we saw this week in retail sales. So from the LEI standpoint, I would say it's a lagging indicator overall. I really wouldn't read a lot into it, but it is just emblematic of a slowing U.S. economy.
That is Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and political economist at andrewbush.com. Up next, rideshare customers in Chicago face a tax hike.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Mayor Lightfoot is reportedly set to hit ride-hailing companies with a major tax hike, which could be the first step toward a broader congestion tax. We welcome Bob Reed, business writer and contributor, Chicago Magazine. Bob, how much beyond the current 72 cents a ride now charged is Mayor Lightfoot expected to go with this rideshare tax bump?
Well, they're talking about a new downtown zone surcharge that would amount to $1.75 per trip. That's for single rides, and then 60 cents per trip for shared rides. And if you take a solo trip within the downtown zone, as it's defined by this plan, which is probably the central business district near North and the West Loop, you could be paying as much as $3 in fees to get around. So there are some significant hikes being proposed here. The idea, according to the mayor's office, is to try to help reduce congestion, particularly downtown. The jury's out on whether this is going to do that, but they think this is one of the ways that you can do it.
That's a big chunk of change. So where would the money go? Where would the city spend it?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the city is saying that some of the money would go toward improving and upgrading mass transit and adding bus stops and such to places that are called public transit deserts, which means the south and west sides where you don't have as much public transportation. But a lot of it, too, will probably just go right back into the general operating funds. You know, the city is looking at an $800 million-plus shortfall for the next budget, and they have to find a way to fill that.
Taxi cab companies have been anything but thrilled with the ride sharing. So is it them finally saying, finally, the ride sharing gets their fare, their due?
Well, if you want to hear people complain about ride sharing, just talk to a cabbie. But the Lyft, Uber, Via, all of these companies are going to push back hard on this proposed plan. And one of the reasons is that they're talking about increasing the city's ground transportation tax to $1.13 on all of these solo ride hailing trips. That's citywide. That's an 88% hike. And what the ride hailing companies are going to say is that's going to penalize the economically depressed neighborhoods. It's going to hurt business in that area. And, you know, there are community members that agree with that, and they have been advocating that City Hall go slow on this one.
Get ready to pay more for ride sharing. Thanks, Bob Reed, business writer and contributor, Chicago Magazine.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Jennifer Kuiper. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Retail credit cards sport some of the highest interest rates around, and they are reaching new heights. In Entrepreneur Friday, how a trip to Australia inspired a woman to take a new look at breakfast in America and start a business in Chicago. Negotiators try to hammer out a contract on the second day of a teacher strike in Chicago. And Ireland's Irish Prime Minister is applying more pressure on British lawmakers to pass Boris Johnson's Brexit deal. WBBM Business. Right now, the Dow is down 177 points at 26,848. The NASDAQ is down 66. The S&P 500 is down almost 10 points. And AccuWeather says we're going to have some sun and clouds today, a high 60. We have 53 degrees at 1231. And the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues, sponsored by the Village of Bedford Park. Well, we have an interesting day on Wall Street. The markets are trading lower today. Joining us with the latest on what's moving Wall Street, we have Lou Stanislavich, President and CEO, Legend Financial Advisors out of Pittsburgh. Thanks for joining us, Stan. What is it that's weighing on the markets?
Well, again, I think it's more of the same. There's been, obviously, we're not directly affected by Brexit, but we certainly are. There's been some negative news, the market's resting. We've been in a kind of a recovery since May, or more a leveling off, I should say. And these are the same issues. And, you know, the market continues to wait for maybe another cut in interest rates in the near future. So, a lot of that's there. And you also have many, many companies missing what were previously decent earnings expansion. You also have generally global gross domestic product, which was expected to grow about 4%, now coming down to, depending on which measure you use, 2.9 to 3%. All those things are impacting the markets negatively.
Lou, what about some of the earnings that we've seen come out today? I think I saw Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson. I think L Brands came out too. What's the latest with those?
Well, while those are all positive, Johnson & Johnson is still battling, and today the latest one was reported a couple of hours ago. Now they're finding the asbestos in baby powder, and that's scaring people off. From that, Johnson & Johnson has a decently good number this year. They're up about 13.5%. About 5.5%, and they have sported 2.9% dividend. However, weak earnings expectations for this year as well as the next year are certainly keeping the stock down, and it's trended downward for a while.
What about we have some earnings coming out next week as well, right? Anything you're keeping your eye on?
Not in particular. I think what you're going to see is a lot of the subscription service stocks have been, we're at peaks. They've been coming down as recently. However, more your basic line industries are reporting a little bit better news than perhaps you would have expected. Coca-Cola, while being a staple, this year has been up 13.6%. Its earnings came out relatively well. It also sports about a 3% dividend. However, it's been an up-and-down kind of move, and lately it's tailed off. But, again, a company like Coca-Cola will do relatively well even through a recession because it's a company that its demand for its products are relatively inelastic. Now, that may be affected more in emerging market countries and by currency issues. However, here in the U.S., it would be relatively a steady company.
We have Fed officials speaking today, and earlier I believe it was the Fed's vice chair who had some things to say. What do you say? What did he have to say? And was that some play on the markets as well?
I actually missed that one, but nevertheless, I think the general view of the Fed is it's a split Fed. Some of them don't believe we should cut further. There's a few that definitely think we should cut right away. And the rest are in the middle.
And how about U.S.-China? Just an update on that. I mean, there's not much that we've seen since the last meeting, and there were some ag purchases in there that came about. But it's been pretty quiet, hasn't it?
Yes. I think what we're going to see is probably a new round from somebody. Okay. this thing does not seem to want to go away. Nobody wants to seem to make a big aggregate deal. I think, you know, we're going to be going back and forth like a ping pong ball for a while regarding this. So maybe we'll get some smaller extractions, but I don't think anybody should expect a major concession from China.
And what has happened in China? We talked earlier today that they didn't have some good economic news over there, but could that be something that the U.S. might use in the next negotiations and to their advantage, to our advantage?
Oh, I'm sure the U.S. is trying to twist their arms whichever way they can, whether it's economic news, whether it's trade or what have you, even expansion capital, buying their goods. All that has slowed down, and obviously we're trying to twist their arms. Where we're seeing most of the impact of a lot of our tariffs, though, are in places like Europe and so forth, which are struggling, frankly, even Germany, which is a major exporting country, is struggling with its exports by comparison to normal times.
That is Lou Stanisolovich, President and CEO, Legend Financial Advisors in Pittsburgh. Thanks so much for joining us. And up next in Entrepreneur Friday, how a visit to Australia inspired a business started in Chicago.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Entrepreneur Friday on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Today we are talking to a woman who has opened a business inspired by a meal she had while studying abroad in Australia. We welcome Emily Griffith, founder of Lil Bucks in Chicago. And Emily, it's spelled A-C-A-I, but I'm going to let you say it so everybody gets it right.
Oh, Lil Bucks.
The product that you sell is acai?
Oh, yeah. So actually, that's the way I discovered it, acai. I had it on, I say, a life-changing acai bowl while I was living in Australia. I know, people are like, oh, really? It's very millennial of you to say. But yeah, I had like this amazing, it's the acai bowl. It's basically a blended fruit, like a smoothie in a bowl topped with traditionally granola and fruit. And what made this bowl so special, I had it while I was in Australia, was the crunch in it. Had this amazing crunch because they were using sprouted buckwheat seeds instead of granola in the bowl. And I felt so amazing after eating it because turns out sprouted buckwheat, they're technically fruit seeds, so they're not a grain. So they're gluten-free, grain-free, they're high in protein. So I was getting all this really satisfying nutrients from it without all the grains and sugars. And from there, obviously became extremely obsessed, and fast forward a couple years, have a company focused on sprouted buckwheat with two different product lines.
And how do you even begin that? You go from sitting on the beach to starting a company. Do you have a business background, or is it friends that have helped you with this? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I did go to school, undergrad, for business, but nothing, I'm sure most entrepreneurs will say, nothing really prepares you for the entrepreneur world, and food is pretty complex as well. But yeah, I actually was working at a marketing agency in Australia for a while as well. So that is a really helpful background. Design, marketing, all comes very naturally. But operations, logistics, my mind personally is not built for that. So just constantly chatting with other entrepreneurs, got involved with the Hatchery, which is a nonprofit in Chicago that helps food businesses. So they were incredibly helpful, like literally went to classes on like how to start a food business. And that, you know, you just learn along the way.
What has been your biggest challenge in getting this product out there?
One thing that's been really tough is since this is a new type of food for the U.S., I mean, there's buckwheat available. It's very popular in Russian and Eastern European cultures, eaten like almost like a porridge, kasha. But in this sprouted and dehydrated crunchy seeds, they're eaten like a granola. Just totally new thing to the U.S., even though it's popular in Australia. I thought, you know, it'd be an easy sell here. Like, oh, it's popular in Australia. I'll just make it and make my own flavors and creations in the U.S. And people who like healthy food will like it. But it's just a lot harder than that. There's a lot of even just like changing one word on the packaging can make such a difference in, you know, it clicking for someone in the grocery store, because I'm not here. My team's not always standing, you know, in the grocery store like, hey, you should try these sprouted buckwheat seeds instead of this sugary granola. So really like communicating what these interesting seeds are without being there.
Where is the product now? Where would we find it? And where will we soon see it?
Right now you can find it. We have a store located on our website, lovelittlebucks.com. It's in a lot of, there's a few of the Pete's Fresh stores around Chicago, a lot of independent stores. We're on Amazon Prime. If you just look Little Bucks up, that's a really popular way to get it. And then soon, starting in January, we will be available in all the Whole Foods in the Midwest. All three flavors, original, cacao, and matcha. And we have a lot of other fun creations coming as well. So stay tuned.
Oh, we will. You have a lot of energy, Emily.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited about sprouted buckwheat. I can tell you that.
Somebody's got to be. Emily Griffith. Yeah. Emily Griffith is founder of Little Bucks, and that's in Chicago. And she's working out of the Hatchery. Still to come, why consumers should think twice before opening another store credit card.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Store credit cards come with some of the highest interest rates on the market, with an average annual percentage rate of more than 25%. Let's get the lowdown from Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com in New York. And Ted, tell us, retail cards are reaching new heights. How high are we talking about?
The average is 26%, which is 5 percentage points higher than we see on your average general purpose credit card. We're probably all going to be offered one of these store cards this holiday season. If you carry a balance, don't get it. The interest rates are so high, you need to beware.
They really push those at the registers, and it seems like they always push it with an instant discount, which in some cases, if you have a pretty big purchase, might be a little tempting.
There are a few instances when store cards can make sense. First of all, you have to pay your bill in full and avoid the interest. I'm glad you mentioned the discounts because, yeah, if you can save 10% off a refrigerator or a whole bunch of holiday shopping, that makes sense. Don't waste the credit application on 10% off a pair of jeans, but if it's a sizable purchase, go for it. Also, consider these if you're loyal to a particular store. If you love Amazon or Target or Best Buy or Gap or Ann Taylor, these all offer 5% back at their stores with their card.
But taking a look, can you tell the difference? Tell us the difference between store only and the co-branded store cards, because there could be a pretty sizable difference in the APR.
The average interest rate on a store only card is about 27.5%. On a co-branded card, it's about 23.5%. The difference, of course, is that store only cards, they're sometimes called closed loop cards, they can only be used at that particular chain. Whereas a co-branded card, it's going to have a Visa or MasterCard logo. You can use that anywhere. Those can be useful for building credit, maybe as your first card or if you're rebuilding credit after a past misstep. These are easier to qualify for, but again, the interest rates are so high that you have to pay in full to make it worth it.
Ted, what are some of the store chains that are topping the industry as far as charging the highest APR?
The biggest offender is BrandSource. They're just over 30%. We see stores like Big Lots, Piercing Pagoda, Staples, Zales and Discount Tire not far behind, very, very close to 30%. That seems to be a tipping point. We see this especially on electronics, appliances, furniture. Unfortunately, there's a bit of a desperate audience here if you don't have the cash and if something breaks. But besides getting that emergency savings, look for a general purpose 0% offer. Generally has more attractive terms than these store cards.
That's Ted Rossman, industry analyst, creditcards.com in New York. Thanks for joining us. And just a reminder, if you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind to the time you want. We have a brand new pause and rewind function that works both online and by updating the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.